Welcome back. Kim Carnes, best known for her monster hit, Betty Davis Eyes. And that one's called Crazy in the Night. Appropriate for late night radio. We will discuss, well, we're going to meet a man who convinced Canada's former defense minister, Paul Hellyer, to go public with his shocking views on UFOs, ETs, and Roswell. Victor Vigiani will be with us. He's a retired Catholic school principal who not only convinced the Honorable Paul Hellyer to come forward in 2005, and that was really an historic event in the world of UFO disclosure. But Victor will also share with us or reveal, as he was a school principal, and he came to believe that a number of his students, several of his students, were actually victims of an alien abduction, and he then took these cases to the legendary, the late Dr. John Mack of Harvard University fame, and we'll find out what happened. Victor Vigiani joining us shortly. I just wanted to point out our webmaster tonight, Tim Banal, has posted some great stories at coasttocoastam.com. The feature story, Greenpeace drawing ire for its Nazca stunt. Not sure if you heard about this. Again, it's the featured story at the In the News section. Activists from Greenpeace could face serious legal ramifications for a surreptitious stunt at Peru's Nazca lines. This past week, members of the environmental group entered a restricted area surrounding the legendary hummingbird geoglyph and composed a massive sign which endorsed renewable energy. While the message may have been well-intentioned, the Peruvian government contends that the unauthorized intrusion into the local into the location damaged the previously pristine landscape, and criminal charges may soon be filed against those who committed the clandestine deed. And again, you can read more of that story at the featured story section on the coasttocoastam.com website. And the hot story has to do with Japan, whose economy is just one hot mess. But they're betting its revival. Japan is betting its revival on humanoid robots. Great story there. Again, that's the hot story at coasttocoastam.com. And thanks to our webmaster, Tim Banal, for that. When we come back, Victor Vigiani will reveal how he convinced the Honorable Paul Hellyer, Canada's defense minister, former defense minister, and former deputy prime minister, to come forward and speak publicly about his views on UFOs, ETs, and the UFO crash at Roswell. Back with more of Coast to Coast, my name is Richard Serrett. Victor Vigiani is a retired school principal from Toronto, Canada. He has a Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology and psychology and a master's in educational administration and curriculum development. Victor's research and analysis of anomalous aerial phenomenon has spent over 30 years. His experience involves UFO sightings, report investigation, counseling work with individuals reporting anomalous experiences, presentations, and journalism in the field of ET disclosure issues. His extensive UFO research has been completed throughout the southwestern United States in locations such as Groom Lake, Nevada, Corona, Roswell, the Very Large Array Telescope, White Sands, Los Alamos, and Dulce in New Mexico, and in South and Northeastern Australia. He is also the executive director of Zealand News Network, which is a news service dedicated to the compilation, distribution, and analysis of news relating to the disclosure of information concerning the UFO ET issues. Victor Vigiani, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Just fine, Richard, and glad to be with you this evening. This morning from here, anyways.
Indeed. Most of us who follow the UFO disclosure arena are familiar with people like Stephen Bassett, of course, who works tirelessly in this area. But some of us, you know, maybe tend to forget that around the world, in many other countries, there are sort of the equivalent of Steve Bassett's toiling in their jurisdictions, doing their part to try and bring their governments to account on this issue. And you are one such who's doing that very thing in Canada. Before we get into your efforts in the disclosure arena, let's just get a bit of a primer from you of how you first got interested in this whole area of UFOs and issues. Does it stem from a childhood experience, perhaps?
Well, at the time, I don't think it did. Subsequent to me getting involved back in probably 1975 or 76, as I recall, it was a simple matter of me browsing through one of the shopping plazas and malls in downtown Toronto and coming across a book in a bookstore written by Jacques Vallée, and it was called Revelations. And it was just an afternoon browse looking at books, and I picked the thing up and started to page through it and looked very interesting, and it started talking about unidentified flying objects, whatever they, however they were called back then, and the way he characterized them. And I paged through the book, I bought it, and I read this book by Jacques Vallée, and it completely confused me. I had no idea that kind of thing was being exposed to the depth that Jacques Vallée brought upon the whole issue of UFOs. And I read the book, and actually I read it two or three times before I could actually digest the entire amount of information and the meaning of what he was trying to get at. And from that point, Richard, I think something rang a bell in me that, and once a bell is rung, you just can't unring it. It propelled me into an area of investigation and just consuming literally every single book that I could get my hands on about the issue. And each time I read a book or someone's views on it or listened to something about that whole phenomenon, I became more and more engrossed at it. Now, whether or not it was hearkening back to something that I went through as a child, I was yet to become fully aware of that, not till later on, many, many, many years later. But that's how I got involved in it and eventually became involved with MUFON and eventually got onto radio here in Toronto with one of the premier, I guess, UFO shows that has ever been in place here, either in Canada or even the United States. Strange Days Indeed with a good friend of mine, Errol Bruce Knapp, and we did many programs together. And from that, the whole thing just opened up like a huge sea of information for me personally, and I'm still swimming in that sea.
And I described Zealand News Network. Just give us a little bit, flesh that out a little bit. What is Zealand News Network about?
Well, in my efforts to understand, first of all, what this whole issue really is, I had to come to grips with the fact that there are so many researchers out there, so many really good people that were working on this this information in many, many different ways. And I tried to come to grips with how to handle absorbing all the information. And I didn't want to just become just someone who had a website and wanted to put out information. So I decided to put together a news service. And it's a news service that deals exclusively with the dissemination, as you rightly introduced in the preface to your introduction to me, that we want to get the information out to the public, and there are no news services that do that. The regular mainstream news service does not and cannot and will not do that and refuses to do that. So I took it upon myself to develop some sort of model around which I could coalesce the information that was coming at me, and it was coming at me and a lot of other people too, just in droves, literally every single day, with all kinds of incidents, issues, political, geopolitical, all kinds of matters coming towards me as a person and as a researcher. And so what I did was I developed a news model so that I would develop some method of disseminating this information rather than completely analyzing it all, which I do some of. I try to disseminate the information as far and wide. Now I have a database of well over 4,000 news agencies and general public individuals that I disseminate this information to. And it's the only news service here in Canada that does this kind of thing, and one of probably one or two others throughout the world. There really isn't a news service that does the kind of thing that Zealand Communication is doing. So that's the kind of service that I provide, and I think it's a unique service, and I think it serves a real purpose in serving disclosure and getting information out there.
And the disclosure movement in Canada, How does it differ, for example, from the disclosure movement in the United States? We tend to think, when we think about the disclosure movement, we think of, again, Stephen Bassett. We think of the truth embargo beginning in the summer of 1947 in Roswell. Again, all eyes pointed to the United States. But how do you approach disclosure as a Canadian? Is it different?
Yes, it's very different. The understanding that and I guess the pervasive way that the American theater deals with this is extremely political in a lot of different ways. And because of the nature of the media in the United States, disclosure is a very, very hard nut to crack because of the media control. And we can go into that a bit later if you want. But the way the media in the United States and North America, in that part of North America, deals with the whole issue of the UFO matter, there's a certain sense of intransigence about it. And the media has some very, very tight controls regarding how this stuff is reported. And that sort of, in essence, it really reflects a difference in the way the media in the United States is portrayed and sort of plays itself out. While here up in Canada, our media is not nearly as controlled and restricted as the United States media is. It's a little bit more amorphous. We have the CBC, which is a national broadcasting agency that spans from the West Coast to the East Coast, and it's listened to by literally millions every single day. And then we have different kinds of media outlets within Canada that aren't nearly as controlled by the big news agencies that control the media in the States. I'm talking about the Disneys and the Time Warner. That just doesn't happen up here in Canada. It's not the same kind of thing. Now, there are certain kinds of, I guess, larger media outlets that do have exercise a lot of control over the kinds of information, but it's not nearly as insidious and as well controlled as it is in the United States. And by the way, there really isn't any evidence up here in Canada that our intelligence agencies have any real control or exposure to how media here in Canada disseminates information, whereby in the United States, the National Security Agency, the CIA, the FBI, and all different kinds of agencies have their hands in how media portrays any number of issues that the American public listens to.
But you would have to agree that there is this glass ceiling. Maybe it's not imposed from above. Maybe it's simply cultural. But there is still this avoidance of the UFO ET issue in the mainstream media in Canada as well.
Well, of course, there's absolutely no doubt about that. And the metaphor that you used, the glass ceiling, it's something that I use in a lot of my presentations, and that it's okay to talk about it on the small radio programs that I'm interviewed on here up in Canada. The odd radio station in Halifax might give me a shout and talk to me about 4 or 5 minutes, 8, 10 minutes about the whole UFO issue. But it never pierces through what you well characterize, Richard, as the glass ceiling. It never really pierces through that. And that's one of the things that Zealand Communications is attempting to do, is to break through that glass ceiling and make the whole issue of the UFO ET presence that's engaging the planet something that's okay to talk about. And we're gradually making really good strides in that. And that's one of the things that I kind of point out about Zealand Communications, is that we are becoming a very well-recognized source of information that media is beginning to depend upon and call upon to look for sources of information, and credible sources of information, in a professional manner that they can depend upon to at least portray that information to their listeners and to their readers about what this UFO issue might be about. Now, we have not completed that mission yet, but that mission is well underway, and we think that we have a very, very good chance not only of cultivating and managing and maybe grooming the Canadian media to accept this whole issue in a bigger way, but also to portray to the general public through our own organizations, the exopolitical organizations that we have, in a more meaningful way. So we're making great strides in that effort, and I'm getting more and more calls, literally month by month, from agencies that want to know more about this, but they're just sort of on the tip of the iceberg before they actually jump in the water to discuss this stuff. So we're making overtures to a lot of the larger media organizations up here in Canada to make disclosure something that we can talk about.
Are you saying that there are reporters that are working for mainstream news outlets in Canada that are contacting you by email, that are curious about this issue, that are interested in covering it, but for one reason or not, they're not ready yet?
The answer to that question is yes. There have been three that I know of right off the top that have made overtures because of different issues that I've brought up and they've latched on to. A very, very good example is one that happened at the citizen hearings on disclosure back in April and May of 2013 in Washington, D.C. I covered that. I was there for all 5 days. And unexpectedly, I got a call from a reporter from the Washington News Bureau for the Toronto Star, Mitch Potter. And he was gracious enough to let me know that an individual reporter who had contacts with me during the Paul Hellyer era in 2005 had suggested that she had suggested to Mitch that I talk to him about the whole UFO ET issue, and which we did. We talked about it at length on May the 1st, the evening of May the 1st. And lo and behold, the next day, Richard, it was front page news on the Toronto Star, which is the largest newspaper here in Canada and one of the largest newspaper distributions in North America. And we managed to make the front page on that. And that's something that we're really proud of in terms of the way we're trying to get through to this. And people are trying to expose this issue through the back door. We're not in the front door yet. So that kind of, back door activity is really serving us well. And there are definitely reporters out there that want to nip at the butt on this, but they just don't have the full permission of their editors or their publishers to go forward with it in a complete and exhaustive way.
And what do you think is stopping them? Is it self-imposed? Is it cultural, or is it more nefarious, more sinister than that? What's preventing these reporters from doing their job essentially?
Well, I think it's a number of things. It's probably all of the things that you mentioned, one way or another. There's a certain culture among media, no matter where you go, in Europe, United States, Canada. There's a certain culture among journalists that if you touch this issue, you're tainted with it, and you're thrown behind a wall of incongruity, and you just don't even get any kind of compensation for your work after that. Because as soon as you deal with the UFO issue, you know, you're sort of estranged from the journalistic community. That is slowly kind of breaking down. There are some journalists that are getting involved in it at a local level, and that's sort of a first step in the right direction. The other thing I would imagine that's really at work, especially in American theater, is this whole idea that as soon as you begin to talk about this issue in a really meaningful way, the larger corporations that control media just slam dunk you, and they just will not have any support for you at all because of the way they reach into the large media corporations, both here and in Canada. They have significant control over the kinds of things that media puts out. And once again, our CBC is a very good example of that, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. They have controlled this whole issue from the very outset. Way back when, on a program called As It Happens, Barbara Frum used to interview with regularity Stanton Friedman about the UFO issue. But that came to a very, very quick close well after that program was told not to deal with it anymore. And it's very difficult to get onto that program because As It Happens is one of the most listened to programs up here in the early part of the evening here in Canada.
You have it on good authority that they were told. How do you know they were told not to cover the UFO issue?
Well, what I know is that Stanton Friedman has told me that once he had appeared on these programs a number of times in an informal way, they just stopped. They literally just stopped calling him about this issue. Now, whether they were told by the CBC executives or because the issue was just too hot, it just was not dealt with anymore in the CBC.
All right, Victor, listen, we're going to take a time out here shortly. When we come back, I want to talk about your efforts not only to wake the media up about this issue, but also to get the attention of local members of parliament up here in Canada. And, of course, we know about Stephen Bassett's efforts in the United States. We'll talk about your efforts up here in Canada to force the government to release what it knows about UFOs. Back with more of my conversation with Victor Vigiani as Leon Russell takes us into the break with Tightrope here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Tom Jones, If I Only Knew, from his album Reloaded. Here's a guy I really admire. He's constantly reinventing himself, and it's kind of a guilty pleasure, you know, to admit that, you know, as a guy, that I like Tom Jones. But hey, I'm not up there throwing panties at his concerts, mind you, but I like Tom Jones. Hey, back to my more of my conversation with Victor Vigiani, who is a Canadian UFO disclosure advocate, and he'll reveal how he convinced former Deputy Prime Minister and Defense Minister, the Honorable Paul Hellyer, to go public with his views on UFOs, ETs, and the UFO crashes at Roswell, or near Roswell, at considerable risk. Imagine someone of his stature, a former deputy prime minister, talking openly about the fact that UFOs are real as the planes flying over your head. Think of the risk to his legacy. So we'll get the inside scoop on how he actually convinced Paul Hellyer to speak publicly about it. And we'll also talk about his ongoing efforts to force Canadian officials, government officials, to basically fess up about what they know about the UFO ET issue. And we'll also talk about the smoking gun document up here in Canada as it relates to UFOs, and that's the Wilbert Smith memo. We'll find out who Wilbert Smith is and what that memo is all about. And again, we'll talk about Victor's career as a principal at a Catholic school here in Toronto, and how he came to believe that several of his students were actually victims of alien abduction. All that and much more right here on Coast to Coast AM. Don't go away. UFO disclosure advocate and the executive director of Zealand News Network, Victor Vigiani, with us on Coast to Coast AM. Victor, how did you meet and get to know and gain the trust of the Honorable Paul Hellyer, Canada's former defense minister?
Well, it's a rather interesting story. Once again, I'll have to repeat that I was doing a radio program up here in Toronto on CFRB, one of the larger local radio stations here in Toronto. At the time, it was owned by Standard Broadcasting. And the radio program was called Strange Days Indeed, and the host was Errol Bruce Knapp. And Errol and I had been doing the program for a number of years. And one night, I believe if I recall correctly, because the symposium that we had was in September of 2005, and I believe if my memory serves me correctly, it was in late April or early May when we did the program. And I forget who we had on that particular evening, but we finished up. It was about 1 o'clock or 1:30 in the evening, rather in the early morning. And the operator on the other side of the glass said, Victor, there's a call for you on line two. So I said, well, who could that be? And I had no idea who it was, so I picked up the phone and said hello. And there's this fellow, I'll use his first name only, his name is Jim. And he said, is this Victor Vigiani? I said, yes, it is. He said, very, very abruptly, he said, you need to talk to Paul Hellyer. And I said, well, what do you mean? I had no idea what the man meant. I knew how I had known of Paul because in my younger years, you know, as a student and going through university and all of that, Paul Hellyer was Deputy Prime Minister of Canada. I followed his career, not intensely, but I knew of him being Minister of Defense and all of that. So I knew of Paul. And I said, well, why do I need to talk to Paul Hellyer? He said, you just need to talk to Paul Hellyer. And he gave me his telephone number, and I wrote it down, and that was the end of the whole conversation. I spoke to this fellow once again a couple of days later to try to get clear exactly what he meant. And he said, I know that he's interested in this issue, or he may be interested in it. And I didn't know why at the time, and this fellow couldn't explain why. So I called Mr. Hellyer several days later, and I asked him, I said, I got a call from your friend, Jim so-and-so, and he said, oh, yes, I know Jim quite well. And he said that you may have an interest in this whole thing of UFOs. And he said, well, I do, yes, I'm considering reading a book. And I said, what book are you reading? He said, The Day After Roswell by Philip J. Korsel. I said, well, that's a very interesting book, and that's great. Go ahead, have a good read, and it'll be a real eye-opener for you. And I said, if you have any progress on that, if you have to, you know, think about what you might want to do with that information, we are planning a symposium later on in the year, in September, September 25th, actually, of 2005. And if you come up to some conclusions on the whole idea of the UFO issue, we'd love to have you as a speaker. And the time, he said an abrupt no to it. It was just a complete abrupt no. And so I said, fine, if you change your mind, let me know. So several weeks went by, Richard, and I called him again. And I said, have you finished reading the book? And he said, yes, I have. I said, well, what else have you done to kind of convince yourself that this might be something you might want to investigate? He said, well, my nephew recommended that I speak with a general in the United States, a retired general in the United States, about this whole issue. And I've spoken to the general twice. And the general, in addition to my reading the day after Roswell, the general said that everything in that book was true and even more. And to make a longer story short, he said, I think I'm prepared to come forward to talk about this at your symposium. And literally my jaw dropped at that point. I had no idea that the man would accept it. And from that point on, we talked a little bit more about what he might talk about and how he might handle it. And that's basically how Paul Hellyer decided to come forward, and how I gained his trust to do that. And he became convinced that he had to speak out, more so because of the way the government was handling the issue and the way it was not dealing with the serious ramifications of, and the global aspects of what the UFO issue really meant. So that's basically the story in a nutshell.
Was Hellyer at all conflicted about what coming forward and speaking publicly about this issue might mean to his legacy, for example, his reputation?
Not at all. Knowing Paul Hellyer the way I do now, I completely understand, and reviewing in my own mind what his history was. This is a man who has challenged government on all fronts during his career. He was literally a hair's breadth away from being the Prime Minister of Canada. Pierre Trudeau defeated him narrowly in an in-party election, and Pierre Trudeau won the mandate to run for Prime Minister, whereby Paul lost to Pierre Trudeau, and we all know what happened with Pierre Trudeau and the way his government unfolded and all of that. So he was that close to being the Prime Minister of Canada, and from that point on in his career, he went out of his way to challenge many of the issues in terms of in the housing and the transportation area. So he's a man that really stands up for what he believes. He's not really a person who buys into party politics the way most politicians do. That's what I've learned about Paul. And whenever an issue needs to be brought forward in a very incisive and determined way, Paul Hellyer is the person that can and will do it, without any real consideration for what people think of him. I think he believes that the adage that what other people think of him is none of his business. He just goes ahead and does what he has to do.
And that announcement, that public announcement, yeah, in 2005 at the University of Toronto, of course, it caused, you know, there were shockwaves that reverberated throughout the UFO disclosure movement.
Right.
And yet, I mean, were you disappointed, shocked, dismayed at the lack of media attention when you had a man of his stature talking about UFOs publicly, and barely a ripple caused in the mainstream media, other than the odd derisive comment?
That's true. That's the way this issue is handled, Richard. Basically, it was a rise and fall, very similar to most of the pronouncements that most individuals, like, for example, Fife Symington, the former governor of Arizona. He came forward in a way that was pretty provocative at the Disclosure Project hearings that were held, I think, in 2001. He came forward then, and he made several pronouncements about it. And being a former governor in the United States, it was sort of the same sort of thing. It was a rise and a fall. The media covered it a little bit, but then you never heard about it again. And that's the characteristic of how media handles this thing. And we were very, very disappointed that Paul did not get more airtime on this, especially in the Canadian media, because no matter who you are, it really is not something that the Canadian media wants to pursue. Now, if someone of the stature of a prime minister were to come forward to say that, it would make front page news here in Canada. But because Paul had been retired at the time for many, many years, it was just a matter of, you know, one person's opinion versus the onslaught of media pressure that that can arise in the mainstream media to put somebody down so quickly, put them down to the floor and just have them, you know, counted out to three and they're just down and out. And that's exactly what happened to Paul. And we're still suffering from that in a lot of different ways, but at least we attempted to crack that glass ceiling. And for a moment, we almost did. We put a nick in it, but we haven't cracked the ceiling yet.
I come back to Stephen Bassett, of course, and his efforts in the United States. He's now distributing DVD copies and media kits to every member of the U.S. Congress, the House of Representatives and Senators. And this is these DVDs and media kits contain all of the video testimonies of all those who testified at the citizens' hearing. Now, even before that happened in the United States, you attempted something similar up here in Canada with the members of Parliament here. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was part of an initiative that we started through Exopolitics Toronto at the time, whereby we had a friend of ours who was developing it was a DVD called Fast Walkers. And it was at the time we thought it was a very comprehensive overview of the whole UFO ET issue, and it was very well done, very professionally done. So what we decided to do at the time was to gather together about 315 copies of this. We purchased them at our own expense, and we did exactly the same thing with the Fast Walkers DVD, and we sent a copy to each member of Parliament here in Canada. And this was well after the symposium in 2005. I think it was in 2007, 2008 that we did this. And once again, you know, we sent these things out. We sent them to Ottawa. We had to go through some very serious, you know, security issues to get these things into the landing area, as they called it, at the House of Commons up here in Canada, so that they could review the packaging that we had and take all kinds of security precautions to make sure that, you know, what was in the packages was indeed a DVD and not something else. The hoops that we had to go through to get that done were very strenuous. But in fact, we did have the opportunity to get this stuff to each member of Parliament. We had, Richard, three responses to it saying thank you very much to the DVD, and that was about it. So once again, you can kind of see the mindset of most people, not just here in Canada, but globally, and more so, I guess, in the United States, that they're very closed-minded about entertaining any real incisive information about what this issue might be, despite the professionalism that this DVD was put together with. They just don't have time to deal with it. And even if they do have time, the cynicism and criticism that they would expose themselves to would be substantial. It would take someone of the caliber of Mr. Hellyer to come forward in the House of Commons up here in Ottawa to come forward and ask the defense minister about the UFO issue, and no one has the courage to do that. That's a real disappointing thing about our political system here in Canada also.
Do you ever feel like giving up?
Not at all, never. It never enters my mind. It's not something that would ever be something that I would consider, and that's probably the mindset of just about everyone who's involved in this whole issue globally. And I know literally hundreds of people, Richard, that work tirelessly every single day on this thing. They spent, it's almost a 24/7 thing for them. And whether it's something in their DNA, whether it's something in their whole mindset, their education, their upbringing, I think the whole idea of what this issue really means to us as a civilization means a whole lot to a whole lot of people, and they just are relentless in not giving up and hopefully at some point in time being able to crack that glass ceiling in order to bring this issue forward.
Give us a quick history lesson. Again, when we think of the UFO disclosure movement, we think of things like Roswell. But up here in Canada, there's a smoking gun document called the Wilbert Smith Memo. Tell us about that.
Well, the Wilbert Smith document was written by Wilbert Smith. Just briefly, Wilbert Smith was a senior radio engineer for Transport Canada back in the 1950s. And what happened there, he was given a grant to open up a small station in Shirley's Bay in northern Ontario. And one of his jobs was to, for some reason, they gave him permission, and I believe the amount of money that they gave him was about $250,000 at the time, which was a lot of money. And one of the mandates that he was given was to investigate the properties, the electromagnetic properties of UFOs. And at the time, you know, no one really thought too much about that. If that happened right now, it would be front page news. But at the time, it was just something that was done in a very, I guess, covert way, or at least it didn't. If it wasn't covert, it was definitely not something that was portrayed in the media at all. So Wilbur Smith did that, and with very little results, the operation was closed down rather quickly. But well after that, he was sent to Washington, D.C. by his superiors. I mean, what his mandate was he was to visit the Canadian embassy down there and visit with some of the hobnob with some of the scientific community down in Washington, D.C. to try to find out a little bit more about what this whole UFO issue was. And one of the things that he came back to when he wrote the report after a visit to the Science and Technology Division, he came back and he made a three-page report to his superiors. And I'll read some of it to you right now. He said, I made discreet investigations to the Canadian Embassy and through Washington, D.C., and the following information I gained. Part A. This matter, the matter of UFOs, is the most highly classified subject in the United States government, rating higher than the H-bomb. B, flying saucers exist. C, their modus operandi is unknown and is of consequence and is being monitored by a small group of people headed by Dr. Vannevar Bush. And then D, the entire matter is considered by the United States authorities to be of the most tremendous significance. And that's on page 3 of the memo. And we feel that's a smoking gun because of the information that he drew from and where he drew the information from. And in the final analysis, when this whole issue does break forward, especially here in the Canadian media, Richard, I think this is one of the documents that's going to be held up and be front page news on any one of the number of newspapers here in Canada. Because it is a smoking gun document where one of our officials from the government went to Washington and found out that UFOs were in fact real.
Why are you so confident that this is going to break wide open? I mean, here we are 30 years later for you anyway. You've been in this arena for at least 30 years and not getting a lot of traction, certainly with politicians. Why are you so confident we will have disclosure?
Well, confident is a very good word for it. One of the reasons that I feel confident is that a secret and a lie can only last so long, and eventually the truth has to come out. And throughout history, Richard, this has proven to be the case. And you can go back as far as you want. You can go back into the era of Galileo when he challenged the Catholic Church. And there are a lot of similarities in that kind of scenario. And he was in prison for the rest of his life once he came forward to challenge the Catholic Church and the fact that the Earth was not the center of the universe. And eventually, it came out. It took a lot of struggle. It took a lot of people to come forward to attest to the fact that they sided with Galileo rather than the Church. But eventually, the truth came out. And it's been the case with just about everything in the in the whole development of humanity. The truth always has a way of seeping through the cracks and eventually embedding itself into the consciousness of the general public and becoming self-evident. And with the number of people just generally in the public, we know that well over 70%, if not even higher, of the general public believe that the government is hiding information about this and that there is information that we are in fact being engaged. It's just a matter of time before this secret is exposed for what it really is, as a lie. And lies don't have a way of sustaining themselves. They're eventually exposed. And this lie will, in fact, be exposed. I'm as confident of that as I am with the fact that the sun will rise tomorrow. Now, just because the sun has risen every single day for the last, you know, 3 or 4 billion years doesn't necessarily mean it's going to rise tomorrow. But we take it on good faith that it will. And there's
all right, Victor,
possibility that it will.
So, all right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back, and I want to talk about your career as a principal at a Catholic school and how you came to believe several of your students may have been victims of an alien abduction. Tom Petty takes us into the break with Last Dance with Mary Jane right here on Coast to Coast AM.